wheel of time turns and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. Welcome to Dragamount. I'm Kathy Campbell.
I'm Rajiv Mote.
And I'm Maureen Carr.
And it has been several weeks since we last spoke to each other, which is weird. That's the hard thing about, you know, we go all in for 10 weeks, sometimes shorter if we're lucky enough to get, you know, pre-episodes. Oh, well, I guess it's not 10 weeks because the first three come out. It's very confusing. What is time? Either way, we have 10 episodes.
We were talking to each other for hours.
Hours and hours every week. And then suddenly we're like, okay, we need a break from each other. Just kidding. Yeah. We needed a break from everything just to kind of collect our thoughts, especially because what a difference this season ending was compared to season one. Like, above and beyond, way better show overall. It just made me so happy that this is the show that we get a podcast about and that we get to talk about and that we love so much. Yes. And I'm just so, so happy.
It's a lot of fun. And I think especially with how this season ended, there's more to be excited about and to speculate about.
Oh, yeah.
For the next season. So, you know, that's what we're going to do. Now we're going to look forward to season three.
The season one episode of, you know, speculating for season two was really hard. That's why we ended up waiting until we had more information, mainly because I don't know about Rajiv and Maureen, but I was just like, I don't want to jinx it to be better. Like, I didn't want... I was afraid that if we talked about things too much, like, something bad would happen again. I don't know. It was very weird. Then, of course, you know, stuff did happen, but at least not a global pandemic. So, you know, it works out in the end.
That helps.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there's a lot more for us to talk about, too, especially because we know a little bit more about, like, the book content. So we knew going into season two that most of it would be book two and some of book three. The difficulty with that is that we didn't know what was going to happen. And especially with the Matt stuff and having a new character there that was going to start out in the tower, the speculation would have been pretty useless at this point. Like, if we did it when we're doing season three now. But season three, we know from Rafe Judkins, showrunner of The Wheel of Time, that this season will pretty much be the all around book four. I think there was some mentioning of some pieces pulled from book five and a little bit possibly from three, just kind of like bits and pieces. But the majority of the plot line and the stories will be from book four. Yeah. And so that gives us a little bit more structure to kind of talk about things as opposed to, hey, this would be cool or this is what we want. But it does mean that this podcast will be a little bit different when it comes to spoilers, book spoilers specifically, obviously show spoilers, because duh. But normally we try to have the bulk majority of our podcast episodes be book reader, non-book reader friendly. We don't want to spoil things if you're going to get into the books or if you don't want to know what's coming based off of, like, our knowledge or whatever. We like to kind of keep it open for everyone. However, this podcast episode is, of course, a little bit different. It's going to be a little bit more difficult to do. But we are going to have some content for you, so don't run away yet. We kind of wanted to talk about each of the characters, the main characters, of course, not everyone, kind of where they're at the end of season two, both mentally and physically. obviously most everyone's in fall.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty obvious. But we wanted to make sure that we had just kind of like, not reminders so much as like, this is kind of where we're guessing that everyone's feeling and how they might lead into the next season. Mm-hmm. Based off of where they're at now. Let's get started. Head off with, you know, apparently the main character, but we all know that it's all about all of them all along. But let's talk about Rand.
Okay.
Officially announced.
The dragon reborn.
Yeah.
The dragon has been reborn. His banner flies across the sky. Yada, 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 yada. He has killed Ishmael again. He's successful at that. He's, you know, captured a city.
Okay, yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. Or liberated one.
Okay. Liberated. Depending, you know,
how you talk about it.
It's all words. Yeah, it's all, you know, depending on what POV you're in, for sure. Mm-hmm. So how do we, like, obviously he, this whole season had kind of been him trying to learn more about himself, what the heck was going on, how to, you know, stop channeling. That was a big part of what he wanted to do. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I mean, this is an accelerated curve on the typical Joseph Campbell hero's journey thing, you know, and part of that is you get the call to adventure and you refuse the call for the first time. So the first half of season two is probably him trying to hide from his destiny. And, you know, he's got this girlfriend. He's hanging out in the city in obscurity. He's shaved his head so no one recognizes him, or so he thinks. And he's trying to get close to someone who can teach him to stop doing this thing that's going to kill everybody he loves, channeling the one power, the corrupted one power of the Dark One. You know, in his mind, the Dark One is dead. He killed him. after season one, and things are good. Now he has to just survive the aftermath, which is kind of an uneventful aftermath in his mind. And, you know, he finds out that, no, actually he has a much bigger destiny and it's interlinked with all of his friends. So, you know, I think where we had season one with the big question, who is the Dragon Reborn? We get the answer by the end. Season two, we say, okay, well, will the world learn who the Dragon Reborn is? And yes, indeed, up atop a tower with a dragon of fire circling it, everybody, you know, looking up to him and applauding and seeing all of his allies. Rand is now the prophesized guy. People know him. His likeness will be known throughout the world, you know, as fast as information can travel in this world. So now he's a public figure. What do you do from there?
Yeah, he's set his Instagram to public. He's made it Facebook official. He's gonna, you know, the whole thing of him standing at the edge of the tower and, you know, embracing the applause and the dragon flame and all of that is basically him accepting the name of the Dragon Reborn, accepting whatever this means, and he can no longer run away from his destiny as much as he can. He is the dragon. He knows that there's a long way until the last battle, probably. Probably knows that there's more Forsaken out there now. Or maybe not.
Yeah, let's dive into the speculation there. I think this is a thing that needs to happen, because at least we knew you know, from the beginning of season one, we knew that there was this prophesized person who's going to fight the Dark One. In season two, we learned that the Dark One isn't who we thought it was, and that person who Rand thought he killed wasn't dead after all. Mm-hmm. Now Rand needs to figure out what the stakes are still. And
yeah.
I think the only person equipped with the information to give him that is Lanfear, even though she's got to be very, very cautious now because there are six others who are running around who tell her, your time's up. It's our turn now.
Mm-hmm. And who have very different goals.
Yeah. And no attachments. They weren't friends with Luz Theron.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that definitely is going to be a difference. On top of the fact that here he's gone from a sheep herder to the most like talked about prophecy person in the world ever. Like, that's a big jump. And so there's going to be a large learning curve, I think, not just in channeling, but in what you're able to, like, how to manage yourself. Anyone that has ever, like, been promoted in a career that is very different than the job that you were doing currently knows what it's like to be thrust into whatever area of power that you feel like you have no idea what's going on. At least if you did get promoted, you have proof of skills. And like your boss like knew you could do it. Whereas like there's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's being thrust into greatness here.
Yeah.
It's worth talking a little bit about the immediate political landscape, too. So, obviously, Falm is a part of a nation which has its own politics. The people of Falm seem to be pretty happy about Rand. The Seanchan have been defeated. Their ship sunk. Their leadership killed. You know, they're not destroyed completely, presumably. There are more of them somewhere, but they're not, they've been kind of thrown back a little bit, so they're not in the immediate venue there. The White Cloaks, the Children of the Light, they also came as basically liberators, saviors for the city. So I don't know whether you know, Dane Bornhold, of course, is pretty pissed at Perrin, Two Rivers, as he knows him as. But, you know, I don't know that the White Cloaks have left, and I don't know what they would, how they as a political organization would want to approach Rand as the Dragon Reborn.
Yeah, it's going to definitely come down to whether they believe, which they probably do because they believe that the One Power is only supposed to be wielded by the Creator, which would mean that even male channelers are not supposed to do it. They're also witches or whatever they want to call
them. Or maybe especially male channelers, because we know that they go mad and destroy things. That's, so, and maybe the people, the White Cloaks that are in Falm, they, you know, Geofram seemed to be the ranking White Cloak there, but they may not have enough leadership to say, we know how to treat with them. They may need to kind of get orders from their home country in Amadicia.
Yeah. Do we know if Valda survived?
Valda did, I believe. He was helped out by... We never saw him die, at least.
Okay. I couldn't remember because my brain was heartbroken, so I've kind of blacked out that section of the show.
Hopper didn't score a kill.
No. That's, you know what? It's good. Once again, bestest boy. She deserves best actor nods, actress nods. But we, okay, so It'll be interesting to see if the White Cloaks leave and, you know, reconvene, and who's in charge. I mean, that comes the biggest thing is who's in charge now that Bornhold is dead. But we'll have a little bit of speculation as to what the White Cloaks will do in season 3 based off of the books after we blow the spoiler horn.
Absolutely. Maureen, what were you saying?
So I was going to say that since the dragon is there with the White Cloaks, are people going to associate the two and think that he's on a White Cloak's leash, or maybe think the White Cloaks have turned and now they're dark friends too because they're working with this false dragon? So I think that might come into play, just that they both happen to be there at the same time and then they're just going to get lumped together.
Well, yeah, that's definitely a possibility.
It's a fair question. And I think one of the things that's going to determine a lot is there going to be a time lapse, from the last scene of season 2 to the first season of season 3, or first scene of season 3?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah.
Is some of this stuff going to, like, say, this is played out a little bit? People have gone back to their home bases. They're consulting with their leadership. They're trying to figure out strategies for dealing with or approaching this dragon. Is he a false dragon? Is he a real dragon? All of those questions kind of may happen off camera. But I think going back to Rand, he's got to figure out what his next move is. I think there would be Moraine's character may want him to, start consolidating power, getting an army behind his back, doing some things to get ready to lead the world essentially in the last battle. But there are maybe other leaders that are pulling him in different directions. We still don't know what the White Tower and whether Swan is still in charge. Mm-hmm. She's, what has happened to her when Lanfear tossed her aside and shielded her, maybe? Or we don't know what she did to her.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting to see what Maureen does. You know, we've talked enough about the quote-unquote main character. Let's talk about the interesting ones.
Sure.
Maureen... Sorry. So Maureen has, kicked butt, taken names, and been on this journey of, rediscovering herself as a channeler, rebonding with her warder, having this reconnection, and is now going to reconnect with the rest of the Two Rivers folk, I'm guessing. They're all in Falm. So it's time, to get the band back together.
It's the perennial question, though. What is her plan? What is Moraine's plan at this point? Because she hasn't really had one for a while.
Yeah, I know. I mean, her sister saw it too, that she didn't have a plan and had no idea what was going on. And I think now we're back into kind of the area of, whatever that she can control, like the knowledge that she has. She knows how to lead. She knows how to kind of work things going, she can do a little bit more with stuff. And so I think she's going to come back into her space of, I know what I'm supposed to do. Now we can guide, especially, the separation with Swan and the White Tower.
Yeah.
She's going to have to do that kind of quote unquote controlling.
Yeah.
And get it ready.
In the absence of any other information, if we take Moraine as she was, as she ended in season 2, I would guess that one of her first moves would be, all right, Rand, I wanted to guide you, surreptitiously toward Loghain so you could learn all you can about channeling. That didn't quite go as expected, but maybe we need to go and fetch Loghain and keep him as a teacher for you, because you're going to need to do this. And again, this is, we're assuming a revelation that the other seals are broken, the other Forsaken are loose, and we still don't know really what the whole dynamics are of the Dark One himself. You know, the power behind the Forsaken. Is the Dark One free? Should they be worried about him right now? Is it all the Forsaken first that you have to deal with, and then the last battle happens in some other way? We kind of don't know how that works in the show.
I think
what are Moraine's stakes right now? What does she need to deal with next?
Yes. Like, how she's obviously got to get control of the situation, you know, as best that she can to get them going where they need to go. But we don't know how much power she's going to have. We don't know where that's going to work, like how it's going to work.
And I'd even question if she would want to reassert control, right? Because her thing was like, well, you know, that's her inclination, but she did have that epiphany in season two that, you know, it's not stated, but it seemed like it was, you know, the wheel will weave as it needs to weave, and I don't need to protect Rand. The wheel will protect Rand. So she, right. I wouldn't even be surprised to see her ask him, like, where do you want to go next? And he's going to go, like, what do I know? I don't know.
We know in season two, Moraine used her manipulation powers that she learned growing up and also as an Aes Sedai to manipulate Rand into getting with Loghain, into being where she wanted him to. And so we've seen already that she's willing to put herself, you know, in the shadows to get him to do what she needs. And so I think I think there's a chance that she may not stand next to him and try and bully him into doing things so much as continue on this manipulation through suggestions. And it'll be interesting to see which path she tries to go.
I think Moraine very conveniently remembers certain bits of prophecy that weren't mentioned before, and that's the way of driving forward the plot. But and that's fine. If there's a new bit, then hopefully we'll do that. But the other thing might be, and this might be a segue, we had a shot when the folks are standing on the tower top. We had a shot down below where the Aiel women are realizing that they're looking at the Kara Karn, and they may be the driver of where Rand has to go next. They may say, you have to come to Ruidian. You need to, we've been sent to look for you and bring you back because you are of our people and you must lead us now.
And we know based on announcements and conversations that the Aiel Waste is a scene that will happen in the show. Stuff that's been confirmed for season three. And I used
the term Ruidian, which is bad because that hasn't been introduced in the show yet. But yes, the idea is you got to come back to our homeland.
Come and talk to the people. And so there's a very good chance that the, like, one of the first pieces of disagreements and like arguments will be between where Moraine seems to think that Rand should go versus where Rand wants to go, which is probably with the Aiel. And so I can see that being a big, big thing.
we have a possible direction for Rand and probably Moiraine. She wants to stay close to him and then Lan by extension.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
To go off with Avienda and Bane and Chad to the waste. And, you know, if Moiraine is canny about that, or at least curious about it, she might say that, oh, okay, well, these fiercest warriors in the world want Rand as their leader. That might be a good thing for the last battle. So, yeah, let's do that. So it may not be as much of a conflict as one thinks, especially if she doesn't have her own ideas of what needs to happen next.
Yeah. Yep, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
What about Lan now? He's reconciled now with Moiraine. Yes. I thought this was actually kind of a... I thought we had an opening through the plot for Lan to distance himself from Moiraine and become more attached to Nynaeve. But that doesn't seem to be happening. What do you think's going to shake out there? Where are Lan's loyalties right now?
I think Lan's thoughts are definitely with Moiraine. Mm-hmm. It's fresh again. He's put himself through the test to protect her, to do the changes that he knows that she needs, and is also like reconnected and obligated himself to her. However, he doesn't know that Nynaeve is in the city yet.
Yeah.
Right? That hasn't been seen. And so as of right now, he's, you know, going to be all in on, I am here, I'm a warder again, here we go. And then we're going to see whatever's going to happen with Nynaeve in the future. And that's going to be another big... what is the word? Like, not disagreement, but like the plot points that have like bad things happen. Like when you're writing. Listen, I'm a professional, okay? What is it called? When you like, you're writing things in your story.
Conflicts?
Yes. Oh my God.
Tension?
Yeah, conflicts. No, it's... Oh my okay. God. I swear I'm not an idiot.
Let's say that whole thing again.
Yeah, gosh. So we know that this big conflict for Lan for season 3 is going to be who has his loyalty. It wasn't like season 2... There was obviously that attraction and attention paid, but that was not his priority. He needed to get his Aes Sedai back on track. But now that she can channel again, he's going to have that conflict between whether or not, like, who he stays with, especially because he's had the example of being away from Moiraine. Like, Moiraine is not... Yeah. Going to be the center of his life anymore.
Well, and Maxim said as much. I mean, when they were talking together in season 2, Maxim said, you know, every relationship is different, every marriage is different, that kind of thing. But, you know, you may... he put the question, if reconciliation with Moiraine is what you want, then it's possible. But, you know, you've had some independence for the first time in more than 20 years, probably, you know, is this, you get to choose again. And I think he did choose in season 2. He did all of his Columbo detective work on how, the One Power works. And he figured out what the problem was with Moiraine and that she was shielded and it was tied off. And, you know, he was the one to offer that to her. And he said, you know, he apologized for not having done his duty sooner. So, you know, he's very much offering up his service once again.
Yeah, but I think there's something to be said about the fact that he has that level of guilt. So I don't know if he fully 100% consented in a like clean mind, so much as feeling a level of guilt that he wasn't able to fix this at first, and so needs to do what he can to fix it. And so he's going to be confronted with what that means in his world as a whole, and what it would take to continue to have that happen.
Yeah. And maybe in the fullness of it, in this kind of repair of the relationship, he may start to resent how Moraine treated him. Because she did not treat him well at all. And she was willing to basically pass his bond, which was a very taboo sort of behavior, if we listen to what Swan said. So
even though he does know that she did it to try and save him, and that, you know, they had that moment of forgiveness where she was like, "No, you were always my better." So like he knows that is no longer true. Probably.
You know, I kind of think we're speculating in the direction of like, oh, what about this plot point? When is that going to happen? I think at the end of S2, we're solidly Moraine and Lan are one unit, and they're going to be,
that's a good point.
You know, they're with each other. There may be something else that arises later on that makes Nynaeve a more attractive destination beyond his duty. But that hasn't happened yet. Right now, they are solid. They're on mission. Yeah.
That's a good point. All right. Well, speaking of, you know, let's, for no apparent reason, let's talk about Nynaeve.
Yeah. Yeah.
She had a big moment of acceptance of what her limitations were, I think, in the end of season 2, which there was so much talk about people like nerfing Nynaeve and, oh my gosh, she's the most powerful channel and blah blah blah, and she basically did nothing. And it's like, other than the fact that you have to take off the fletching from an arrow before you push it through a body, she did a lot of internal growth. Yeah. We saw her push against leaders in when she was in the tower. We saw, you know, she drank the dirty water instead of putting it through the Brita filter because she couldn't channel. And the finale kind of showed her what happens if you don't have the control that you need. Right. And what happens if you are not the one in charge.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting
parallel with Egwene, because Egwene's whole reason for wanting to learn more was that she felt like she failed Rand when she could have saved him. And so she wanted to learn how to be better, how to be a better channeler. And Nynaeve confronted that. She said, I can't channel right now. Elaine, I need to defer to you, and I need you with me because I don't think I can help. Yes. That's quite an admission for a wisdom, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there was also talk of, oh my gosh, she'd been a wisdom for so long, and why didn't she think about healing? And it's like, she's never been in a battle like this.
Yeah, this is different circumstances.
Like, absolutely, this is a big difference than the battle in the Two Rivers in season 1. Huge difference, especially since, don't forget, like, she kind of disappeared in halfway through that one, so didn't see. But also, right, like, there was only, you know, a dozen bad guys-ish and 2 Aes Sedai, where we have, like, 3 armies. This is much bigger and so much more scary for everybody.
Yeah.
And so it's okay to have trauma. It's okay to have PTSD. It's okay to have TSD, you know, traumatic stress disorder, like during
the
event, you know, flight or fright. I am talking great.
Flight or fight? Yeah.
Yes. Or freeze, you know? And clearly, she froze. And it was really, like, I was impressed with her growth this season. And especially, like, I wish that we had had a little bit more Nynaeve towards the end. But it was hard because she did have such a heavy beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And so you needed growth in everybody. And so, yeah, we need more episodes and we need longer episodes. But that's a whole other conversation.
Let's not forget the other thing that Nynaeve was involved in, the other plot thread, which I think figures into how her future will play out. Her relationship with Liandrin and her betrayal by Liandrin, and Liandrin's guilt, apparent guilt, over betraying Nynaeve. One thing that I think this also might be a segue into talking about Liandrin, but the Black Aja has been outed.
Yes.
You know, we have to presume at some point Nynaeve is going to be able to talk with Moraine, and Moraine will be able to send messages, whatever. Liandrin can't go back to the tower, is what I think. She needs to get back fast and do whatever damage she can really quickly before any information comes out of Falm. Because, yeah, I mean, she is revealed as Black Aja now. She's revealed as a Dark Friend. That means there are other Dark Friends in the tower. And that's going to be a big vulnerability for her. Now, she's got Lanfear as her new patroness. How much help Lanfear is going to be, not sure.
Oh, like none? Unless she wants something. Right. I mean, this is how she works. If she needs something from you, great. She'll do whatever it takes. And otherwise, you're a flea in her life.
Yep.
You know, that's kind of her thing. We know from an interview after New York Comic Con, Rafe said, we will learn what is going to happen to Liandrin right away. Like, what she was doing during that battle. He basically was like, yeah, first episode, you will know what was going on. So we will possibly have some retribution for what was going on. Or she's going to escape. Or I don't know what it is, but we will learn very quickly. And then from there, we'll see kind of what the Black Aja is going to do, you know, now that they're out. Yeah. The part is, though, no one knows who anyone is other than Liandrin. Like, nobody knows that there are others yet.
Right.
So whatever that looks like will be interesting, for sure. And
we'll definitely talk about that more with the book spoilers. But
yes, we will. Yeah,
I think Liandrin and Nynaeve wanting to deal with Liandrin in one way or another will form a plot thread of season 3.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. Do we want to go to Egwene?
Yeah, let's go to Egwene.
Yeah, she's been through a lot.
Just a little bit.
where does she go from here? Does she still feel like, you know, is her motivation to be like, you know, to learn everything and be the best Aes Sedai possible. Is that still part of her makeup now that she's been betrayed and enslaved and tortured and used as a weapon?
I think, if anything, it's only reaffirmed her desire to know everything so that she's never captured again.
Mm.
I think that's, you know, part of the reason of her killing Rena is because she needed that closure to know that this person in particular would not take her down.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, if Nynaeve decides to go after Leandrin, I would expect Egwene would want that double. Unless it'll something happens that steers her in a different direction. Spoiler alert. But
yeah. I think there will still definitely be some rage toward the person that brought this upon her.
Yeah. And so to complete that White Tower triumvirate, we have Elaine, who has come through and is competent. And
even if she has some feathers in her leg, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah. She can still do it, and she's able to work. Here's the thing that I thought of, though, is if Rand has to deal with leaders and rulers at this point, the daughter heir of Andor is a good person to have advising you.
Yes.
So yeah. I wonder if that's going to be the vehicle for her and Rand to bond a little bit.
Yeah, more than just channeling, healing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because he's going to probably want connections outside of just Moraine and knowledge of leadership. And so for him to get to choose something, that's pretty, he's going to choose the hot girl.
Well, yeah. Redhead, they're good. But yes, and someone with the Queen of Andor's ear is, you know, an added bonus right there. So, you know, that makes me wonder how much Andor is going to figure into season three. We know that there are all sorts of political things going on there. We know that there is Elaine's mother who figures into the story eventually. We know that there's another Aes Sedai who is hanging around the palace in Camlann, who's a big force in the story. Does that happen in season three, or does it wait to season four? I don't know.
Well, we know that they have done some, they have talked about Camlann, which is the capital city of Andor. We know that is confirmed. So what parts of that story we don't know. We'll talk a little bit about things in the book spoilers section. But there's a very good chance that Elaine will see her mom, and other people might join. Who knows?
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Or it could even be like, you know, the two the White Tower segments where they sort of happen contemporaneously, but you know, we don't have the main characters involved in that, but we see things happening.
Any,
you know,
of
those we haven't talked about a couple of the other supposed main characters.
Yeah, how about the boys?
Here. Yeah, Perrin and Matt. Where did we leave Matt? We left Matt in a very interesting position. I don't know where we actually left him, right? So he blew the horn. He got a bunch of memories. He says, oh, I'm one of these recurring heroes in history. And I have memories of all sorts of things. And we're going to do a fight. And then, you know, one of his Amaretsu or whatever takes the horn and like hides it somewhere. So goodness knows what happens there, but the Heroes of the Horn disappeared after that battle. Does Matt keep his memories, or does he have holes in his memories now?
It'll be interesting to see what he remembers and if he still has, like, knows where the horn is or is connected to it or can find it.
Like, what does he feel like his role is now he's confirmed as a hero? What kind of obligations does that put on him? And does he
especially
like that?
Because he spent so long, I'm not a bloody hero. He doesn't want to be, but he has refreshed and renewed himself by being there for his friends, even if technically You know, he tried to kill Rand on accident. Hey, I think that's
was
gonna
an illusion in front of him.
Right. It's gonna have some guilt layered in, I'm pretty sure.
But let's talk about that weapon that he used to wound Rand as well, then, because now we had Ishamael controlling, or at least giving orders to Padan Fain, who was very happy to be having that dagger at his belt, that cursed dagger from Shadar Logoth that has a lot of evil and brings out the evil in people. And Ishamael ordered Fain to, you know, tempt Matt with the dagger, and that backfired. Matt didn't touch it. He made his spear staff thing, and you know, then Fain ran off. But that kind of addiction feel to the dagger that we saw in Matt, where he's trembling, he's sweating, he wants to touch it, no, he can't touch it, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Does Fain have the same? Does he crave the dagger? Is he going to be stalking Matt because of that?
And is the addiction for the knife going to be strong, even if it's at the end of a stick?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that continued to tempt him. We don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to talk about Fain in sort of the same breath as Matt here, because, you know, they seem to be bound together by this dagger. But the other thing that we didn't seem to have a follow-up on is that when Perrin and his group with Ingtar and with Uno and those folks were chasing Fain for the first time, they found this village. They found a Fade nailed to the door. And we know that that Padan Fain was involved. We don't have confirmation that Padan Fain was the one who did it, but someone sure did.
Yeah.
And a big question is why. Like, what was the point of that scene?
To show, in my mind, to show how truly evil Fain is, because the only person to be able to manipulate the Dark One's creatures is somebody who is also evil and has this level of control over the beasts. And so even he was able to overpower a Fade, and so that's that's why. I think, like, I don't think
was that just a badass way of showing how scary he was, or you know,
I mean,
we can talk about the book spoilers a little bit, but does Fain have his own agenda now?
Yeah.
Can I jump in real quick?
Especially now that Ishamael is dust. Yeah.
Yes, please. Of course.
So I think it's interesting that Fain, you know, we are assuming he's the one that nailed the Myrdal to the door. And Rajiv, you just said that it takes somebody dark to rule the Dark One's minions, or maybe Kathy said that, I'm sorry. But then we think about Ishamael when the Trollocs came and were like, oh, my master. And he's like petting them and having a child pet them. So even just the differences there, that Pat and Fain needs to bully and scare them, but Ishamael's like, they're fawning over him.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And, you know, granted, one is the Forsaken and one is a minion with an evil dagger. But, yeah, these might be different management styles.
Yeah, very different management styles.
But we should talk about this more in the book spoilers.
Yeah.
You know, there are answers provided, but I don't know if they fit the show right now.
Yeah, we don't know how that will adjust. So let's talk about our favorite Wolf brother.
Perrin. So I'm not sure where he is right now. Other than there's some fun things, you know, in the book, there's this whole thing about hammers and axes and stuff, but he's got a shield. So he's Captain America or Captain Manethrin or something. but which actually may be some foreshadowing, but I don't know what he needs now. I don't think season two has given him a plot thread to follow yet.
I think season two helped him figure out who he needs to be when it comes to anger and peace. You saw him battling with his, you know, internal monologue things based off of what was happening to the Tinkers and how that made him feel. But it came to the point, especially with Hopper dying.
Yeah.
You have a reason, like he cannot sit by and watch the people and animals that he, the beings that he loves be murdered if he can help that.
Right. Right.
And so I think he's definitely made his decision in this sense. And it's going to be an interesting journey with how to live with that, I think.
Yeah. And I said something pretty boneheaded, like I didn't know where season two left him with something to do. Something very big did happen. He made an enemy out of the White Cloaks.
Yeah.
And that's obviously going to figure into his plot going forward.
But, uh-huh. Especially since he knows where he's from.
Two Rivers! Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, we have already talked about the which is he going to choose, violence or not violence? And he's seen that not violence hurts his friends, and now he's seen violence hurts his friends. And how is him doing violence, killing Bornhold, going to affect that going forward? Again, he's seeing violence is, like, I don't know. I think the peace is going to win out. Like, if we're getting the Tinkers back anytime soon, I think he's going to lean more that way.
And I think the shield that he got from Uno is a good symbol of that. There were some Marvel comics, you know, way back in the day, there was a series called The Thunderbolts, and it was where Captain America, who, you know, traditionally holds this shield, he vanished and the other Avengers vanished and they were replaced by these other so-called heroes. And there was this guy who replaced Captain America who wielded a sword. And, you know, people in the comic book, the public was kind of discussing this and sort of they were saying, yeah, it's kind of weird that this new guy has a sword, you know, a weapon used to hurt.
Yeah.
Whereas old Cap, he had a shield to defend. But, you know, he seems to be a good guy. It turns out the guy with the sword was a villain in disguise. But but the whole idea that
Spider-Man,
the things that you're carrying, the things that are your symbols have some meaning. And preparing to carry a shield now, you know, not a hammer, not an axe, but a shield.
Well,
that seems to say something.
Although, to be fair, we don't know that the shield sticks around.
Perhaps.
We do. No. Sorry, we watched.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did. Okay,
he
fine.
Helps with
but
the
we don't
Ishmael
know that he's
going
to keep it. Yeah, well, but like we. I remember at the end of the finale podcast episode, we slow moved the zoom over the top of the tower to see if the shield was still on the top of the tower.
Ah.
I still think it's going to disappear, but we'll have to see.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's see. Who are we missing?
We haven't talked about Alana Maxim and...
Oh, yeah.
The mysteriously Varin. Missing Ivan.
Yes. And Varin and Tomas, too, because
Varin
were left.
Tomas, right.
Yeah.
Are we subscribing to our very own Tom Simone's theory?
I think it's entirely possible that Maxim is a dark friend.
Yeah.
And the whole thing that Lan went through with them was because they knew that he wasn't a dark friend, because they knew things possibly or something. I don't know. It's very complicated, but I think it's entirely possible that that mm-hmm. all three of them are dark friends, or possibly just Maxim.
Or just Maxim. And
that's why he's been, you know, that's the real reason that he's been, you know, hiding himself.
Yeah, fuzzing the bond and having all that. So, you know, that causes some interesting dynamics. And we can talk about this in the book spoilers as well. But let's just remember that if he did send Ivan off to be killed, let's not say who by, but if he did, then that means that Alana is down one warder and affected by it. We've seen how Aes Sedai are affected when their warder dies. It's uncontrollable grief. It makes their behavior erratic. You know, they're not their best selves, but, Alana gets moved into a space where she could become desperate. And that's where we might find her then at the beginning of season three. And that creates a dangerous situation.
Or nothing happened there and stuff might happen in the future.
He just went to a bar.
Yeah. Like, or he went to find the, he's got a connection. Tomas has a connection with Varen on like hot versus cold type of a thing. So she can look at the map and tell him where to go. And so he just followed to find the magic thingy, the location, the Ogier setting thing.
Yeah. And he just didn't show up for that final gathering.
Yeah. But no one else, we didn't see them after that. So... Who knows?
Okay, so we'll leave that dangling.
Yeah. Until I see a body or see the act of dust flying away, I'm not assuming anyone's dead.
Fair enough. Do we want to talk about Varen then? What's up with her right now?
I mean, we don't really know a whole lot right now.
I mean, presumably she is with the other Aes Sedai who were defending Kyrian from Lanfear's attack. Now we know that Siwon is kind of out of commission in some way, and the rest of the Aes Sedai are there.
And Leanne is now unsure of how to deal with what happened.
Yeah. And Leandrin did threaten her, saying, hey, if Siwon goes down, you're going down too. Is that foreshadowing or just, her being mean?
But it'll be interesting to see where Varen shows up after this, for sure. I think everybody. Right? Are we missing anybody? Yeah,
all the major people.
We're missing everybody, but not...
Oh, Min,
Min, I don't know where she is.
No one knows where she... I mean, she's still in Kyrian?
Yeah.
Maybe?
Maybe Leandrin snatched her up again. We haven't seen anything,
so I can't even speculate. Oh, maybe.
Could be, yeah. She was working possible. For her before.
Yeah, and maybe that will be, we'll see a little bit of that in season three. I guess that's kind of our...
And I mean, we've alluded to Siwon, but we know she was on shaky ground as Amyrlin. Even Warain called her out on that, saying, you've got enemies. Mm-hmm. Now she is in presumably a very weak position. So,
and her enemy is very weak, physically.
So, something's going to happen with the shift in the power structure of the tower. Yeah. That's not a hard leap to make.
No,
at this point.
And here I thought we were going to be light in the spoiler-free section, but we're recorded an hour in, so I guess not as much.
Hey, there's a lot of characters here.
It's true. It's very true. You know, I keep thinking, oh, this will be a short episode. No, it's not going to be. But with that, I think it's time to blow the spoiler horn of Valyr. Yeah. All right. So we are now into the book section, which there's a lot to talk about. So we are going to kind of discuss the beginning of the book, of the fourth book, Shadow Rising, a little bit about kind of where that takes place and what we think that will translate to in the show, and then branch off into the separate like locations to kind of talk about that plot that we think is going to happen. Speculation. Obviously, we don't know anything, or we will not be talking about anything other than what is publicly out there officially, because we do not comment on gossip or rumors or
we're so, you know, above that.
Yeah, more so like just a level of respect that we have for for the show to be able to announce things on their own time. And so we will not be discussing any of that. Just official things that have been publicly commented on by the people in charge. But we know a lot. So let's get into it, starting with, once again, our dragon reborn himself, who's now in charge.
Yeah. So let's talk about some differences. If we're talking about starting book four, instead of starting book three, basically, Rand's arc was a couple of things. First book, he finds out he is the Dragon Reborn. Second book, he has his major fight with Ishamael, and it's...
And Turok. And Turok, of course. Like, a couple big fights.
Yeah, but I mean, his fight with Ishamael in the skies over Falm, you know, and it was a fight in the skies, was seen by all, and it... He wasn't necessarily identifiable as who he is, but, you know, people knew that the dragon had been reborn, because who else would be fighting the Dark One way up in the skies like that? So there was that. But there was another piece of prophecy and proof that was handled through book three, which was Rand claims this crystal sword. It's a literal sword in the stone, in this case, Stone of Tyr, which marks him.
Cheesy AF.
Well, you know, whatever. This is all the mythologies.
I know.
I mean, it is the public kind of acknowledgement that he is the Dragon Reborn. Everybody knows this prophecy. He will hold the crystal sword, this Calandor, Turangriel, or Sangriel, I should say, and that unequivocally proves him to be the Dragon Reborn for everyone, for every nation, for any educated person in the know. They will say, yeah, he did this. He is the dragon. So
yeah.
I think what we've done is we've condensed that. So this battle up on the top of the tower in Falm with the giant fiery dragon at the end heralding him, that proves to everyone, that proves to the world that he's the dragon. Whether we'll see Calandor, the crystal sword, or not, I have no idea. But we don't need it as a plot point to declare him the dragon at this point. So,
So... In the beginning of book four, he's now dealing with what it takes to be a ruler. And the Stone of Tyr has all of this, you know, layers of, you know, lessons to learn, shall we say. There was someone that was saying that you know, it's why I think that Falm is not enough of a leadership position for Rand to learn the lessons mm-hmm. that he needs to learn. And I think that's false. I think that he can definitely get the lessons on mm-hmm. you know, leading in Falm, in this city that has been taken over by the Seanchan, being able to like come in and be like, okay, I'm going to be, you know, doing my thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think you have to have that yeah. in the Stone of Tyr to get that to happen.
Yeah. I mean, the lesson there, the dynamic there is that there are world leaders who are coming to visit. You know, the first of Maine, Berlin, is coming in and sizing him up, basically trying to say, mm-hmm. okay, I've got a treat with you. I've got to, you know, get you on my side. I've got a small nation. So, you know, I'm dealing with you from that vantage, and there are nobles in Tyr, and you know Tyr is the enemy of the neighboring country Ilion. So of course all of the high lords of Tyr are saying we want to go fight Ilion. Will you lead us? And Moraine is thinking, oh yeah, if he does that, and I happen to know that Samael, one of the Forsaken, has positioned himself in Ilion, well, he can wage war against Ilion and he'll have all of Tyr at his back. So that's a way to cement your rulership. You know, so everybody's plotting in a way to make, how do we make Rand rule? And you can do that here in Falm just by whoever happens to show up. Of course, settling down to rule is not in the cards for Rand at this point. He's not an administrator. He needs to be on the move.
And I think he's gonna run away from leadership, and he's gonna run away to be in charge of another group, I guess. You know, okay. Everything's cool here. I'm good. They're good. Everything's good. Let's go talk to the Aiel.
Yeah. So that is at least Avienda's role here. Avienda, Ben, and Chad. They are searching for the leader of their people, the Kara Karn, and they recognize Rand as that, and they need him mm-hmm. to go back to their land to be that person. There are other forces in the book. So in The Shadow Rising, another thing is that Padan Fain has been busy as well, going in and cozying up to the White Cloaks and corrupting them and convincing them that, you know, hey, you're Dane Bornhald, Perrin killed your father, and you know he's good friends with this guy who's calling himself the Dragon. You can lead him here by just harrowing their home. Their home is the Two Rivers. Go there and make them suffer, and that will lure Rand. Padan Fain wants Rand, but Dane wants Perrin.
So, I almost think you don't necessarily even need that convoluted of a plot. I think that Dane is going to, well, probably not be in charge. Mm-hmm. He's probably not going to take ownership of the White Cloaks, and instead is going to take people that were originally, you know, super supporters of his dad and take them with him to go to Two Rivers mm-hmm. and make him pay, because, you know, eye for an eye type of a thing.
Yeah.
Well, we've got Valda with him, and Valda also hates Perrin.
Right. And so it's going to be a lose-lose situation for the Two Rivers.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's another branch. And I think, you know, the plot line I call the Scouring of the Two Rivers after the Scouring mm-hmm. of the Shire at the end of Lord of the Rings. You know, where the hero goes back and kind of organizes his people to stand up as a nation. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite plot line of The Shadow Rising, and it looks like that's being set up for the season three, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And then the third thing is what we kind of alluded to when we talked about Nynaeve and Liandrin. The Black Aja has fled the tower because they've been outed.
Well, actually, real quick, we got to talk about the Two Rivers with the Aes Sedai, too, because, you know, in the books, Varen and Alanna and their warders hang out in the Two Rivers to search for, you know, other channelers. And they happen to be there when the White Cloaks attack.
Yes.
And so I think it would be like, I can see. Okay, so obviously this is the book spoiler section. So we know Varen is Black Aja. We know in the books anyways, we know Tomas is in the Black Aja. I think it's entirely possible that Maxim is Black Aja, not Black Aja, dark but friend. A dark friend. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I said Tomas is Black. You know what I'm saying. It's all fine. Everyone, you know, ignore what... Listen to the well-meaning of my words, not the actual words that I'm saying, because clearly, you know, my brain is doing great. So I think if Maxim is a dark friend, he is able to keep that connection apart from Alanna and Ivan, which, you know, and then have somebody else kill Ivan, because there's a good chance that, yes, like you mentioned in the first part of this episode, that he went off and killed him, which would be sad because I really liked him. And Alanna will, you know, be extra protective of Maxim. Mm-hmm. And Varen is going to use her manipulation of being a dark friend to kind of adjust, like, be that help lead that group to do what they need to do in the Two Rivers, and support what the heck's going on.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that we were alluding to, but is being set up, is that Alanna also loses a warder in the books and is in an emotionally frayed state and does get desperate. And when she runs into Rand, she bonds him against his will, you know, not just surprises him. It doesn't do anything, because bonding a man who can channel is different from bonding someone who doesn't.
It does allow her to find him. Yeah, like a hot,
she knows the direction
thing.
And distance, but she can't control him. She said it's like trying to move a boulder. So that, you know, the deep sort of physics and metaphysics of that is that a warder bond is sort of like a circle, you know, linking. And when you have just one man and one woman linking, then the man controls the circle. You need at least two women to be able to control the circle. But anyway, that's nerd lore. But then what else is this about? We're in a podcast for the Wheel of Time.
Okay, listen. Yes, it's true. It's true.
Yeah.
But we also have the Tinkers and Fael hanging out in the Two Rivers to come.
Yeah, so Fael is interesting. You think she's going to be a part of this plot line? Because in the book, they get married. But there's a lot of ground to cover before you can get to marriage.
And that's why I wonder if we will have a little bit of a flash forward. So not like a full year, but I don't think it's going to start right away. I think we're going to have like a month or so.
Yeah.
And we'll have some connections with people, or like traveling, like there's a couple different ways that you can kind of introduce people.
Well, just like
fresh,
just like Celine and Rand were already a couple by the time season two starts. We don't have to see all of that. We can just say, okay, time has passed, they've met, some things have happened, they've had their chemistry, and now we're watching that. So
absolutely. I think The Tinkers. So I think this is a great, like, this trip back to the Two Rivers. They're not going to use the ways. They're going to travel most likely normally, which could be how they meet Fael. But then also you're going to meet the Tinkers again and get reminded of them in time for them to save, you know, and have the whole moment with Aram coming back. And that whole like storyline. And I think, so season two, you had the first part of the season with everyone separated and then they all came back together really quickly. I think we're going to have the opposite here. We're going to have everybody together for the first, you know, episode or two, and then they're all going to split off. And so there's going to be a lot of story to try and fit in 8 episodes. And I don't know how it's going to, yeah, it's going to be weird.
Yeah, I think the first episode is going to have to establish that, oh, there are multiple things that need dealing with and we need to split up. So time to do that. And so episode one is going to have a have to cover a lot of ground. But so we talked.
I mean, the whole season is.
So we talked about going into the Waste with one set of characters. We talked about going to back to the Two Rivers with another set of characters. And what we didn't mention here is that Nynaeve and Elaine are going to be chasing after the Black Aja, or were chasing after the Black Aja in the books, and that takes them to a place called Tanchico, and that's a coastal city, and they get there by hiring a seafolk vessel. And so, you know, we know in the interviews in Entertainment Weekly that season 3 will introduce the seafolk as yet another culture. So I think we have those three threads going together. And, you know, for people who loved Mogedion's appearance at the end of season 2, Mogedion figures prominently into the Tanchico storyline.
Yeah. I think the difficulty here, though, is the fact that two of them are still novices instead of accepted like they were in the books.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if we are going to have a little bit of a break back in the tower.
Well, that's a good question, because in the books they go back to the tower, they regroup, they find the clues about Tanchico, and they go there. The clues were planted, of course, because it's a trap. But you know, we only have 8 episodes, and I think you were about to bring this up. We have the whole tower coup plot line. So Siwan's down. She's not fit for being Ammerlin, presumably. Is this the time when someone else takes the reins? And, you know, is that Leandrin? Is that someone Leandrin kind of proxies to? Which in the book is, of course, Leda, who is currently in Camelon, I think.
Yeah, so I think that this might... So I think we're going to take out the whole flicker bullshit. with or like the traveling with the posts to Ruidian to the Waste. That's all I think that's gonna cut. Because instead I think they're going to be traveling the quote unquote hard way. So this is how you get to Camelon with everybody. On the you expect, you know, and then in Camelon, they'll split off or something similar. And you know, half will go to the Waste, half will go to the Tower. Any of these are options and possibilities that would also make it easier to reconnect with Min somehow, whatever. But you then, like, you could even have, like, this moment of extra stress of, you know, having to be on a search for... the Black Aja, like from here. So instead of going to the tower, they're going to go to Tanchico and like head back to the coast, or I don't know, or even maybe the queen visits.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true. That might happen.
Kid. I yeah. Honestly, I have no.
A time lapse would really help here.
Yes. Yeah. You know, a really great montage of everyone getting back together and like hanging out. You know, we got, you know, Rand is going to do some training. The girls are going to do some training. Maybe we see a montage of them saving
Rima.
The Aes Sedai that was captured. Rima. No. Rima. Yep. Getting her released, because please, like let's get her out of prison, please and thank you. Way too many black characters have been killed, or will be killed, or aren't. Yeah. Let's get some of them free, please and thank you. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of where the paths go to get to Tanchico, to get to the waste, to get to the tower again, to get to Two Rivers, because we're splitting everybody up. There will be some connections, but it's definitely going to be harder.
Yeah. And in the books, remember, Matt went to the White Tower for healing. Are they going to try to do that again? Heal him more thoroughly from the dagger? Or are we just going to skip that completely?
I'm going to guess that they're skipping that.
Go to the waste.
I think they did that. They're not going to try and do it again. There's just so little time. Like episode time.
But if we don't get that scene where he kicks Gawain and Galad's ass, I think everybody will be so mad.
Here in this moment, I can state that I am about 95% sure that's a scene where Matt's going to kick butt with his staff is going to happen.
All right.
Who it's going to happen with, I don't know. Secret. Don't tell anybody. I'm just talking to my buddies, Rajiv and Maureen, right now. We're just letting a little slip. It's fine. But yeah, that scene will happen.
Well, and that's interesting, because that happened in book three. And in book four, Matt's whole thing is the twisted doorframe Turangriel's visiting the lands of the Elfin and the Eelfin. And, you know, there's been a lot of speculation around this. I land on the side of saying they're going to cut that whole thing. They've managed to create an Ashindarai without that. They've managed to put Matt's memories of past heroics into his head without that. So, you know, I think in the book, going through the doorframe is what makes Matt accompany Rand into the waste and to Rhuidon. I don't think he needs to be there anymore. Strictly speaking, from a plot perspective, I think he can go to Camelot. I think he can maybe engage with Gawain and Galad and even Queen Morghese. He might even have his luck kind of find his way to being in court and meeting Morghese or something like that.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is why everyone's going to go to Camelot. Maybe not Perrin in that group, but I think everyone might go into this group in Camelot. So you'll have these introductions of people that have moments in the future. Additionally, this would be the option to allow for Perrin in the future to not recognize Morghese as the maid. If he doesn't go to Camelot, he can't recognize her. You know, the whole like Superman thing. Yep. Like, oh, if she's got dirt on her face, we can't recognize a type of a situation. You know,
you can't
that whole thing, right? Yeah. So I think if you have the girls and Rand and Matt go to Camelin and then split off and go to the Waste, and the girls go to the tower, well, except for Egwene is going to end up going with the, like...
Yeah. So in the books, Egwene starts her exploration of dreaming, of being a dreamwalker. And we know from the Entertainment Weekly interview that dreamwalking will be more pronounced. The talent that Lanfear had will be a little more explored. And mm-hmm. in the books, Egwene is very capable of this. She's a dreamer. And in one of her forays into the dream world, she meets an Aiel Wise One who tells her, come to Cold Rock's Hold. I will teach you how to do this, how to master this talent of yours. And so she goes with Rand into the Waste and learns a lot of, you know, super things that help make her one of the most powerful people in this series.
Yep. Make her who she is.
Yeah.
Which is a badass. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, so Swan, if we're setting up the tower coup, mm-hmm. This also could be a way, so instead of having this whole complicated strategic whatever for the coup, you could have, instead of it being you kept the dragon from us, Swan maybe admits to Leanne that she's shielded, if she's shielded, or whatever's going to happen here, and they use that as the reasoning to depose her.
Yeah.
That sort of lying, like mm-hmm. maybe they try and lie and get it figured yeah. out.
Well, also, possibly. You know, she did fail spectacularly. You know, yes. the things that she planned to do, and that, you yeah. know, one could argue the most important thing she had to do, she failed at. And mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think she'd have a lot of critics, and this would be a way for Elaida, who has not been in the tower, who has been advising Queen Morghese and Camelin, to step in and said, you know what? I was staying away from tower politics, but it's time I stepped in because you botched this, sister. And, you know, Leandrin as an allegedly Red Aja might even plant the seeds for that by sending messages ahead, but, or working through the Aja. But I think Elaida could come to see that stepping up to be the head of the White Tower, to be the next Amarlun seat, is a duty of hers, especially in these dangerous times.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a perfectly good way of establishing Elaida having the right intentions going into this
yeah. role. Yeah, and it makes it so that you can have her stupid innocence, almost.
Yeah, yeah.
And make that work.
And given the rumored casting, which I won't refer to, but you know, if it's a powerful presence, if an actor,
yeah,
an actor with a lot of good gravitas, then we want this character to be acting in an intelligent, principled way, in a yeah. way that the character Elaida in the book was mm-hmm. absolutely not principled or intelligent.
Yeah. So. Completely like off topic and totally not discussing you know, any of this rumored casting, but I just finished Assassin's Creed Mirage. And the voice of Rashaan, who's one of like the mentor of whatever, is played by none other than Shohreh Aglid. Agdoshlu. I cannot pronounce her name, but I don't know why this topic got brought up. But may or may not have some reasons for things in the, right, in the future. Right. Just cool. I should learn how to say her name for no reason. So I think I'm excited to see Leanne have some more featured bits in this plot story. I think she really was one of those standout. So season one, Leandrin for me was the surprise hit of the season type of a thing. I think Leanne for me was the biggest, like, I was not expecting her to have such a strong, like a be in so much, but man, am I excited.
It'll be fun to watch. And, you know, that's the other thing. And this is going into book five, Territory, The Fires of Heaven. When Siouan is deposed, she and Leanne are together. Min is with them. And they've got another traveling companion who's Loghain. So, you know, that's another way of potentially drawing this wonderful actor who plays Loghain back into the season. And we know that he's got a role to play later on, but it'll be cool.
So
to
is
see
he
if
still in Kyrian?
He's still in Kyrian, but you know, Kyrian is going up in a fireball right now. It's chaos. So if Loghain wanted to leave, he certainly could at this point. So if he meets up with someone on the road, you know, let's call it Tavern. Let's call it the pattern weaving, as it will. It can happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. All right. What are we missing? Did we cover everybody?
You think Bail Domon is still waiting for Lanfear in his ship?
I think that sounds like a great situation to put him right where he needs to be to meet a Shanshan lady that apparently is not the Shanshan that takes off her helmet to punish.
Okay.
Okay.
Mainly because, but.
So we're talking about Egianon, Captain Egianon,
yes,
who does appear in book four.
Yeah, but it may. Like that character had a different name. Somebody went through and like looked up, found that actor and looked in the credits.
Got it.
And found who she was. But again, we don't know for sure. So, but either way, I bet Domon is ready to take up the mantle of a scared, whatever, you know, he's gonna meet Moiraine again. He's going to meet Rand. You know, he's gonna be involved, I think, in whatever he feels like, really.
Yeah.
So I think just to summarize sort of the plot lines we have by location, it seems like we're gonna see the Aiel Waste, Tenchico, Camelin, the White Tower, and the Two Rivers again.
So, and the ocean.
Oof, that's a lot.
And the ocean.
That's too much.
Yeah.
And we got to fit that all into 8 episodes.
I know. Oh, gosh.
Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, not going to happen.
We had a lot of locations in season 2, though.
We did. But these are involved plot lines. These are plot lines that need to have a lot. They've been economical. They've been able to cover a lot of ground. But you know, boy, it's always the complaint I have. I savor some scenes in the books, and they, you know, even if they take up like half a chapter, in my mind, they're sort of these long, expansive things that just you know, live expanded in my mind. Like we were talking about Perrin's arc with Fael and going back to muster the Two Rivers folks to fight the Trollocs and then to kick the White Cloaks out and then to establish themselves as a new nation reborn. That's a big thing.
Yeah.
And I want as much time spent mm-hmm. doing that as possible. I want to see all the little reactions of all the villagers yeah. and Two Rivers folks looking at parents saying, I remember when I used to, you know, strap your hide for stealing honey cakes. And now yeah, I say, yes, sir, because you're leading us into glory. I yeah. want to see all that.
I mean, I think it's pretty easy to solidify that, though, in a very easy, like, in a, not necessarily a montage, but you can make that, the writers have been yeah. absolutely fantastic about managing to get so much done with so little. And I'm like, it's just hella impressive.
Yeah, I'm, you know, mm-hmm. I'm giving them all my good wishes to yes. be writing this stuff tight and well. Because, yeah. yeah, I really want to see it.
And, mm-hmm. like, let me just say, there's a reason that we are not on the writing staff. And that's because we have no idea what the plot lines are going to be. And we are not in charge. And so I am, I'm very thankful. We're not, but good job us for doing what we need to do.
All right. I think we've basically exhausted the possible. Oh, wait, no, we haven't. We haven't. The Entertainment Weekly article did mention that we would see one other, at least one other Forsaken who we haven't seen yet. We know Mogedion is out there. Lanfear mm-hmm. is going to be receding into the background and hiding and plotting from the shadows. Who's the other one? What's your guess?
If we're going to Caemlyn, it would be Raven.
That's what I was thinking, is it's going to be Raven coming in and...
Or someone in the waste, Asmodian.
Yeah.
So that's where I wonder whether Loghain is going to be the teacher or Asmodian is going to be the teacher. Loghain is at a disadvantage for being severed right now, for being gentle.
Poor Kalo knows. Oh my gosh. Nope. I'm not going to say it in Spanish. Why not both?
Well, you know, and that does happen in the books to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, my vote's for Asmodian. I think that's where Lanfear's kind of behind the scenes plotting comes to fruition at the end.
Yeah.
And sets us up for some really cool stuff for season 4.
Well, and too, just because he said that there was one doesn't mean that there's only one.
Right.
And so
I fully hope for cameos for the others.
Yeah. I was going to say we could meet, although they have been. So we learned that the actors that play the Heroes of the Horn are not the actual casted people for the Heroes of the Horn. So like Brigitte is going to change.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And hypothetically, of course, like possibly, like this is what, you know, people are saying and articles have talked about that being said, similar to what they did with T'Grain, using a stunt actor who is that. For that moment. So it's entirely possible that they're not going to have cameos because they don't want to bring the characters in and develop, you know, hair and makeup and costuming.
Well, the good thing is the good thing is too that the Forsaken can change their appearance.
Yes.
So, you know, we could have in Andor a minor noble, Lord Gabriel in the background, who Morghez looks affectionately at, you know, and that's Raven.
Or
we could see Ilion and Lord Brend, and that's really Samael in disguise. So there could be a lot of stuff that happens.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different again, ways to go about this, and it'll be interesting to see how it goes. And with that, I think we have...
That seems like enough.
Talked everything. Oh, goodness. Well, you can find links to follow us online in the show notes or on dragonmount.com. On our website, we have tons of great content about the Wheel of Time. Blog posts, chapter and episode summaries, news, as well as links to our YouTube channel that has a wide variety of great videos. Also on all of our socials, we have been celebrating Wattober. Kitty is absolutely slaying the TikTok videos, but they're also on our Instagram and YouTube shorts and Twitter, and we will combine them all into a single Wattober 2023 event. Goody. Yes, it's very exciting. We also have forums on there. So if you don't want to live your life assigned to the algorithm and you want to talk to friends and new friends and old friends and people on the internet that have thoughts about the Wheel of Time, both the books and the show, we invite you to come over to dragonmount.com/forums. You can actually log in and register just from the main page, dragonmount.com, and then come and hang out with us, where we will be more than willing to talk your ear off. 25 years worth of information is also there. So if you had a thought and you want to search, you can find something on the forums. And we also have a Discord channel. And on our Discord, we actually have a couple people that are doing their first read through. They're in the middle of Eye of the World, and it's been great to watch their journey in that thread as well. So basically what I'm saying is, if you want to be more involved and you maybe have friends that are local to you that are absolutely sick of you talking about the Wheel of Time, we have places for you to come and hang out with us. So with that being said, I have been Kathy Campbell.
I've been Rajiv Mote.
And I'm Maureen Carr.
This is not the ending, but it is an ending. Thanks for listening, and we hope you have an absolutely incredible day.